Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm a food addict and compulsive eater. And let's begin with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. My name is Rachel, and I am a food addict and compulsive eater. I'm seated with Pamela, who is my co-leader, so she'll be doing the second part. And each of us will have up to 20 minutes to speak, and then we'll open the room for shares up to 3 minutes. So this session is being recorded. So I am here. I asked my sponsor if I qualified to speak at the Decades in Recovery meeting. And so I have 20 years and 11 months of back-to-back abstinence. And so I'm keeping off 90 pounds, and I'm 5'0" tall. So I was morbidly obese at 90 pounds heavier than. But prior to the my years of abstinence, I had 10 years clean and sober. So I have been working the steps that have helped me with my family relationships for 31 years. And I will apologize for people just listening to the recording, but I do bring some show-and-tell items. So these were my pants at my highest weight. So these are a 22, I believe, and I'm holding it up to myself, and it's about twice my size. So I've been carrying those around for a while, but then I discovered these, and I'm like, I need to also share these when I speak. So these are a size 2 pants, and I wore these when I was bulimic in high school, and the compulsive dieting and restricting is a big part of my story. It's also part of my eating disorder. And I have this other little thing that, if anyone wants to see it, I found this when we were clearing out my mom's house, and my grandmother owned this. It was a diet from Harper's Bazaar, 25 cents, the 9-day wonder diet, a pound a day. So I would say this is vintage, maybe, or maybe a feast. And just to say, breakfast is a cup of coffee and half a grapefruit, and that's it. And I won't waste time reading all the rest of it, but just to show you that, yes, I come from a family of food addicts and compulsive dieters, going back a couple of generations. So I'm going to first just talk about some things that I do that I've been doing for over 20 years, but I want to primarily talk about the step work and how doing step work continuously years, how the benefits of that. And being able to look back on those decades in recovery, which is the topic for the meeting. So, but I will just say that I do the same things that I did when I first got abstinent, and this is what I needed to do. I'm a big addict. So the years I got clean and sober first because that was killing me first, but my primary addiction was amphetamine, and a big part of why was because it, in a kind of sick way, but it removed the obsession, right, with food and dieting because I was high on amphetamine. And for 9 years, I would get the pills from my doctor, and I would lose 10 pounds and gain it back. So for 9 years, I was born with a very slow metabolism, and for 9 years, I gained and lost 10 pounds every month. So that's not very good for your metabolism either. But when I hit bottom with the food, which thankfully I did, I had the gift of being able to go for treatment for a month. And it was, what I learned there was, it was like, in addition to just having group therapy and going to 12-step meetings, because I found a place that was 12-step based. And when I did intake over the phone, they were like, well, you know, we're no flour, no sugar, weigh and measure. And I've been resisting that, because when I was just in AA, I was in and out of OA. I was doing, you know, commercial diet programs and saying that was abstinent because I wasn't binging. And, you know, I asked someone if she would sponsor me, but I didn't want to go to meetings, you know, things like that. But, so anyway, so when they said it's no sugar, no flour, weigh and measure, what I said was, you know what, I'll do it when I'm there. So I went down there and it was sort of like I was struck abstinent. I've been abstinent since that day. So that was November 17th of 2003. And it's really a miracle. I mean, my mother who just passed, and my father who died 15 years ago, they both died because of their food addiction. And, you know, cousins and aunts and, you know, people in my family have died from this. And my mother, end of life reckoning as she was dying, which took 2.5 years. But one thing she said to me, I don't know if it's been a year ago now, but she said, Rachel, how often do you weigh yourself? And I chased the scale my entire life. And she was about 85 at that point. And I'm just grateful that at the end of my life, I don't want to be saying that, you know. And so that's what, because I was that way. I was either compulsively, obsessively calorie counting and weighing myself, or I was just binging my brains out. And at the end, I couldn't do the diet restrict part anymore. It was just that. So, yeah, so just to say, in all this time, I've been able to do so many things, and I still weigh and measure my food, and I still don't eat sugar and flour. And I have a nutritionist, food addiction nutritionist, so I trust her with what my food plan is. I can't be in charge of that. But over the years, I do still weigh and measure, and I bring a scale with me. There are times when I'm, you know, when it's maybe not as comfortable to be weighing. I don't like bringing a scale when we have Thanksgiving dinner with my husband's ex-wife. I prefer not to bring out my scale. You know, but in any case, and I say that, and it's not because it doesn't restrict me, it gives me freedom. Without that, I do a lot of, even if I'm not, it might not matter so much exactly the amount that I'm eating, although I am addicted to volumes as well, but it's the obsession in my mind. I'll be like, was it too much? Was it too little? So just weighing my food gives me that freedom. And so that's why I continue to do that. But I have traveled and remained abstinent easily. I went ahead and I asked ahead of time. Now it's really easy to look up restaurants. Everybody has a website now, so you can look up what the menu is ahead of time. But I've been on cruises, and people are like, how can you go on a cruise? It's like all food and, you know, it just, I remain in spiritual condition. Food can be neutral to me. And that's just amazing. I go out for coffee for fellowship after one of my meetings in my other fellowship, and people are eating breakfast, and I'm sitting there with my tea because it's 10 o'clock in the morning, and that's not a meal time for me. And last week, someone just put the bread back to me, and I didn't even notice it. And I didn't notice it, and that's a miracle. So I look back now on the and the step work. The other thing that I continue to do is I continue to work the steps. So I'm never done with the steps. That's a relief because it means I don't ever have to do them perfectly except for step one. And when I sponsor people, I'm like, don't worry about it. Just write and do what you, and what is coming up now. So also over the years, there have been amends that this. Right now, I am Facebook friends with a girl I went through school with, and I owe her amends. I was mean to her when we were young, and so I want to try to meet up with her and make that amend. But there was an amend that from the minute I put down the amphetamine and everything, I knew that that I felt really badly about something. But I didn't know. And then about 14 years after I started working the steps, I was working them deeply in OA, and I said to my sponsor, you know, this just is not going away. It's not leaving my brain. And she's like, you know, I really think you need to make that amend. So I did, and I got a miraculous, you know, a great result. So I want to make sure I spend the rest of the time talking about, what is it like when you continue to work the steps for this long? And I'll just tell you that I had a really my mother, very complicated, and a lot. We had, you know, before I came into the program, we had a horrible, no boundary relationship about where dieting was concerned, and that was, you know, a big part of the problem in our relationship. But my mother was a force of nature, and she was wonderful in a lot of ways, but she was really difficult. And part of why she was difficult was because she had this. But it was hard, you know, especially starting in adolescence. We had horrible fights. And but as soon as, you know, as I said, I went away to treatment, and I came back, and immediately I was putting up a boundary. And I will say, so I got abstinent at 39, and I will tell you that I did not complete my adolescence until I got abstinent. Because work of adolescence is to separate yourself from your... And while I was still in the food or in the dieting, I wasn't able to do that. So there was the boundary there, but I just, you know, kept working the steps. And, you know, I made amends to my mother. They kind of came up organically when the time was right. When I was making amends, you know, my sponsor was like, all right, this time just make amends to your parents. That was the first time I did step 9. And I was able to make amends to my dad. And I just was not in a spot where I could do it with my mom. I was, you know, less than a year clean. But at one point, several years later, I was talking to her, and it just sort of, it was a very spiritual moment. It just came up, and I made amends to her for my 2 suicides. And it was so freeing. But, and it really made a big difference to her. So, but... I want to run out of time before I talk to you about this. So formats in different ways with different focuses. I went through all the steps just focused on body image. And I went through all the steps only focused on my relationship with my mother. And that was also, you know, so it's all this work. And when I tell you about how my mother and I were, so it was such a complicated relationship. Last years of my mother's life, I was able to be a woman of dignity and honor where it came to taking care of my mother and, in a way, just helping her to die. And it was quite a traumatic time, especially the last 2.5 years. She wanted to die at home. She never wanted to go anywhere else. And she, agreed that it was time to just be on hospice care. And supposed to be 6 months. it ended up being 2.5 years. And so I was in charge of her care. And actually, even before hospice, I was in charge of her care a few years as she was losing it. So she, one of the things that she was dying from was vascular dementia. And it was just gradual. All of a sudden, I realized I had to manage her meds. Suddenly, I realized this or that, that there was food rotting in the fridge. But because of the step work and because of my belief in a higher power, I was able to get through that really difficult time period. And I, of being in this program, I had people who wonderfully helped me through the process of, you know, what it's like, what it was like to go through that and toward selling the house. So I was also in charge of the three-story my child's home, and we just sold it a month ago, and it was in my family for 56 years. So that is another difficult thing I'm going through. But you know what? Like, of all the things we went through, you know, the death of my father was horribly traumatic. You know, my husband had cancer, and, you know, and there were a lot of difficult things, some wonderful things too. But because of this program, I was able to get them, not just without picking up the food, but without it even being tempted to do. That's just, you know, use the F word, but I'm not going to. But it's a bleeping miracle. It's just a miracle. And if you look at, I actually do have my pictures with me. I didn't want to pass them. But if you look at where I was and where I am now, and I was not functional or useful. I was, you know, eating sugar all day. And my family relationships were dysfunctional. And at the end of my mother's life, I was able to care and provide the best possible care without even thinking about it, without having resentment. And that is, am I out of time? I think I, 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Good. So I'm glad, you know, I got through that. But also, so I'll just say, also just all this time in recovery. So my husband, our first, well, let's see, we met in 95, and I was sort of high on love, so I was able to keep my weight off for about a year. But then the rest of the time, so from 96 to 2003, he loved me no matter what size I was. And I didn't understand that, but he did. But I was quick to anger, and it's amazing how different and how wonderful our relationship is now. So I just turned 60. I'm in this sort of new phase of life now where I'm much more at peace. So it's sort of opening up my life where I'm available to do more service. Is a big, big part of my recovery. I started doing service at day one because I was taught to do faith service and first fellowship. So when I came into this one, you know, immediately sitting in the front at meetings, you know, doing all the jobs at the group level and then working with intergroup, since 2008. And now I'm doing service at the region level, which is wonderful. I highly recommend it. Anyone. So I think that must be about out of time now. So thank you for letting me be of service. And next up is Tantla.
Can I give you a hug?
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm out of your way.
There's your.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, there's a lot of people here.
This is scary, I have to tell you, but I'm happy to be here. Blessed to be here. My name, I hear my voice echoing all over the place too, that's kind of weird. My name is Pam C. I'm a recovered compulsive bee. Hi everybody. I know I'm not cured. In fact, I had an experience weeks ago that I was out and I had my food with me and I was planning to go to the movies. And I had a suspicion that my lunch was spoiled, starved to death, if I don't get my lunch between lunch and dinner, well, breakfast and dinner, you know. So I ate it. I picked out what I thought was spoiled, and I went to the movie. So it was a good reminder. I do feel that transformation in my heart that I never felt. And my first meeting was 41 years ago next month, and I wish I can tell you that I've been abstinent for all those years. Not been. I have a long history and lots of relapses. I've had time where I've stepped away for a little bit, even a couple of years, but I always came back. A little bit of background, so you know that, well, aside from the story, I really do belong here. I've been more than 100 pounds heavier than I am today. Actually, I weigh myself once a month, the first Saturday month, and the first Saturday I weighed myself, and I looked at what my weight was, ago, the exact same weight, a miracle. Well, plus I was. that's miraculous. I've also been a lot thinner than, so I have experience with restricting as well. I was actually raised to be a restrictor. Have known since very small that food affected other people. Mom was very conscious of our health, so the goodies weren't in the house or they were hidden. And I have specific memories of over to the counter when nobody was around and climbing up. I had to pull the chair over, going into the back of the cabinet. I too had a very troubled relationship with my mom. Thankfully, she's been in recovery for a lot of healing in our relationship. The places that we did was in the kitchen. Large family, I'm the oldest of five, and we often had grandma was living with us, or we would have a foster child that would live with us. But spending time in the kitchen with my mom, and we spent a lot of time there, that's where we bonded. She seemed to, in those times, because I was helping her. And so I associated, from an early age, food with comfort and bonding. And so it's always been really important to me. And I would also notice, we were talking about this yesterday on the way up here, sitting around the table with my family, the other members of my family would leave food on their plate. I could not wrap my brain around that, because what I had on my plate, I would clean it. I would lick it if that was the polite thing to do. I always wanted more, but other people seemed to be satisfied with just enough. It was never, ever. And really binging and then restricting. I really wanted to be a bulimic, but it just didn't work. I figured that was the to my food problem. I could eat whatever I wanted and then just make myself vomit, but I let that. So really binging and volume eating. It could even be my abstinent food. I'm a volume eater. So today, I've been entirely abstinent since February of last year, so it's just about 21 months now, and that's miraculous. Entire abstinence for me is boundaries around my food are really real. And I find that the more time that goes by, the more that gets for me. I became entirely abstinent. I had to put down other things because I have discovered not just that are a problem for me, but other things. It can be you know, I mean, it'd be any host of things that I'll use to get that sense. But, and I've done all the things that everybody's heard. You know, I've left my kids in the middle of the night to go to the convenience store to get my fix. I've left work at inappropriate times to get my food many, many times. I've taken food out of the trash. I've eaten spoiled food. You know, I've done it all. I really have. It is humiliating disease. It really does. I've hidden in deserted parking lots to get my fix. Fear that a cop car would come by and shine the flashlight in the car and have to get rid of it at home. You know, I mean, crazy with the food. And it got a point for me that I would be physically sick, eating so much, mostly sugar, you know, that was the main, that the physical reactions that would happen in my body from ingestible, I mean, it would wake me up in the middle of the night with cold sweats and body, knowing that I needed to go to the hospital, but just too much shame to call out to somebody. But my bottom this last time for me, and I've had lots of them, but this one was the lowest yet, and I'm sure it could get even lower because I also know that the disease is always progressing. Oh, I've seen that. It's worse every time I pick up again. And it was more of an emotional bottom this last time. I was in relapse food for 14 months. I know that the relapse began long before I picked up the food. I was in so much emotional pain. I had so much shame from the way I had been living my life that I couldn't show up for life and my job that I loved the most, you know. I was so self-absorbed with me and my problems and this disease and what I looked like and how I felt and, you know, and I can remember laying in bed in the morning, waking up. You know, sleep would be a relief, and then I'd wake up and the reality of me and my life would be there again, and just feeling this pain at the center of me. I thought, what's the point, you know? Not that I would ever kill myself, but I couldn't understand, like, what's the purpose of me? And that day, it was February 5th, last year, I reached out to my former sponsor, and I told her where I was at, and she wasn't available. Zoom meetings, and I hadn't been doing Zoom meetings at that point. I knew the Big Book was the answer for me because I'd experienced some recovery work through the Big Book. But at that time, there weren't any face-to-face Big Book meetings, so I was going to Big Book meetings and another fellowship help, and it didn't. I couldn't keep the food drinking, but I couldn't keep the food. And I felt like a fraud in there. I really did. So this sponsor directed me to Zoom meetings, and I committed to go to the next one. And the first one I went on, I saw someone who I had become friends with through a phone meeting, Vision for You, that I'm sure some of you know about. Years before, we had gotten to be friends, but we had lost touch, and she knew that was God. And I reached out to her, and we caught up. And I asked my sponsor ever since. She had some pretty steep requirements of me, her sponsees, you know. Things that I was really afraid I would not be able to do. Because the hospitalization period that the Big Book talks about was recommended for me. I had a lot of those things going on in my life at the time. I was getting ready to move. I had a trip planned, getting my daughter-in-law's baby shower. I mean, there were a lot of things going on, and I was afraid. I didn't think I could do it. And she said, so I did that. And the answer that was, just do what she's asking me to do today, you know. And I've been doing it a day at a time ever since. My journey with the thing, it was a really deep dive into the steps this way. But I started to feel skeptical that I would experience that transformation. I wanted that. I wanted to feel that connection. I always believed in God, your power, whatever you want to call it. But I wanted a relationship, and I didn't know. The steps brought me closer. They definitely brought me closer. Seeing my part in any given situation brought me closer. You know, so many things. But I still wasn't, I started to pray about it. You know, I just asked, please show me ways to draw. And answers started. And for me, it was, what really changed things for me was two-way prayer. I started to practice that. And it could feel like an experience. And you know, step 11 talks about grow this relationship. I need direction, you know, I need to know how. I'll do the same thing over and over again until it just is working anymore, or I get bored, you know, I get bored pretty easily. I need to change it up, and I get more exciting and more fun. And two-way prayer really did that for me. And I turn to God with everything day, all throughout the day. I just quiet. You know, because in self-will, I want to do things my way instantly, but it doesn't work. It never worked for me. But when I pause and I just ask, nudge to do something a little differently, you know, even if it's something as simple as don't talk about the people you work with, don't gossip, and it's like, my tongue is bloody because I want to say something so badly, but I know that that's not who God wants me to be. And I have to tell you, in the moment, that's really hard to do, but at the end of the day when I do my nightly review, it's not about me, because I know that I behave in a way that I believe God would want me to behave. And I do that with all of my life today. My relationship with my mom, I mean, there's still triggers there, even though we've experienced a lot of together. But the trigger. And just a couple weeks ago, we were celebrating my dad's 92nd birthday. They wanted to have everyone at their house, which is really, really hard for them. My mom's 90 soon. My dad is 92. They are not the people they used to be physically, you know. And my mom was getting so like overwhelmed with everything. I know what that feels like, you know, I know what that, and this just, I don't do this with my mom. I just went over and I said, give me a hug. And she used to be taller than me. She's smaller than me now. And she just kind of sunk into me. And I whispered in her ear, I said, thank you for always taking care of us, Like 89, she still wants to take care of her family. And I told her that I loved her, and that wasn't me. I realized just recently with a sponsee who's been sharing some of her icky stuff that's going on with her, that my whole life I've been wanting to get my mother back for the things that did to me. Even in recovery, on some, you know, subconscious level, I've been wanting to get her back, and I do that by pulling away from our relationship. I'm not that person anymore, and that's just a miracle to me. And I just want to share something that just popped, a reading from the big book that popped into my head morning. And this, you know, it just is meaningful to me. It's from page 25 in the big book. There is a solution. The fact of our life today. Certainty that our Creator has entered into our heart lives in a way that is indeed miraculous. I feel that today. It is miraculous. I feel God in here, and God is in there with every single person in this room. And oh, that that relationship, God wants all of us, that love in our hearts that we feel when we see a puppy or a baby or anything that gives you joy and makes your heart swell, that's God within. And to surround yourself who have that and want to share it with you and with anyone else, not just those of us who are suffering, but everyone. So, for life.
Okay, and there's something else I have. Okay. This workshop will end at 11:30, I think it ends.
Yes.
So for the rest of the time, we'll hear 3-minute pitches from the floor. The timer will signal you when 1 minute is left. And if you would like to share, please come to the front of the room. We remind you that this session is being recorded, and your sharing demonstrates your consent to be recorded.
If you wish to remain anonymous, please use a fictitious name. Choose not to share. Please say where you are from and how long you've been in OA, but devote your share to your OA experience, strength, and hope on the topic, which is...
Thanks, everybody.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mark. I'm a compulsive overeater and a food addict. My first meeting was at St. Jean d'Arc Church, July 1984. I've got my 40 years of highlights here, so I can keep it to under 3 minutes. But over those 40 years, I've gone to meetings in Merrimack Valley, north of Boston, Metro West, where I live, of Boston, the Boston area. Now I live in northern New Hampshire, where I thank God every day for technology called Zoom and phone meetings. What I've learned about my recovery is I'm like Richard Gere and an officer and a gentleman when Lou Gossett Jr. is trying to get him to drop out. He goes out and says, I have no other place to go. Well, as a lifetime food addict, for me, OA is the only place I have to go, and I'm grateful for it. Part of what I've learned over the years and people I've met, I lived in the Framingham area, and Ethel G. was one of our pioneers. Used to attend meetings with her, and for those that knew her professionally, she was in public health, and she had the best mantra, which I've kept for over 30 years, is I brush my teeth after every meal. One, because it's good hygiene, and two, because it tells my brain that my meal is over. And the honor of 1997, go to the World Service Convention in New York City, which was the last year. Ethel, Roseanne, Bernie, we're all together, and I'm great at that. Into the 90s, I was a member of the Chelsea men's meeting, that infamous men's meeting outside of Boston. And we had started a men's marathon at a certain point and stuff. And for men, it's different than women. You know, for men, it's just macho, everything else. And I had to admit that I was taken down by a Twinkie. But I've attended many AWOLs. I've been participants in. I've been through process. I still attend it today. I'm a food sponsor today. I have a big book step study sponsor today. My mantra is, I've learned, I am enough, I have enough. And then recently, through my friend Terry and Waltham, I do enough. That's my mantra now and stuff. This OA and 12 steps given me over these last 40 years, it's given me a life. It's how to live life one day at a time. 40 years have not been perfect. Some of the worst eating I've done while I'm still attending meetings. I was sick of an addict I am, and I have to admit that today. I had no other place to go. And that's why I really live this program, and I enjoy this program. And the last part is some of my most intimate confidants and friends.
Hi, I'm Bobby, a food addict from Waltham, Massachusetts. Hi, and I am so excited to be here amongst my people, and it's really nice to see everybody's legs, because a lot of you I only see in the Brady Bunch, boxes, or the, what's the other that was on? Hollywood Squares. We are all stars here in that case. So anyways, we're all winners because we're sitting in this room. I have been in program since March 8th of 2000 was my first meeting in Waltham, Massachusetts. It was on a Wednesday night. We used to have two big meetings there, Mondays and Wednesdays. I walked in there, and I can't tell you how thrilled I was to hear it was not a moral issue, that I really was not my fault, that it was a disease. And I cried and cried and cried during that meeting. But they weren't tears of sad. They were tears, it was cathartic. God, I know I belong here. And I never left. And I've been going to, have not had perfect abstinence. I have not had burnt flour in my body since March 8th of 2012. Sugar. Went home that night and thought, if it works for these people, then I guess it'll work for me. And I got on my knees and said, God, please take away this compulsion of mine to eat sugar. I am a hardcore sugarholic as well. And it was lifted. And it has to be something bigger than me. And so, and I had a tea bag, God, before I came in and worked steps and was in program. Every time I was in hot water, I'd call on him. And now I am, it's my best friend. One conversation's in the car all the time, bathrooms, wherever I am. And when I first came in, I have to be honest, It was really hard to be around those sweet things. Could not be in the same room. Oh, my God. So I want to tell you a quick story of where it's gone from March 8th of 2000 till maybe last year, I think. So I could not be near him. I could not smell it. I could not be in the same room with where I was working at the time. If it got on my hands at all or anywhere near me, I would have a really difficult time. I did a lot of saying, it's poison, it's poison, it's poison. About a year ago, I'm a teacher, and I also have to, I'm a science teacher, but I have to do electives where I work. And one of my electives is cooking, which is really kind of ironic. And we were making something, and somebody asked us to make, I'm going to say the words, you know, asked us to make cupcakes for this party thing we were having. We made 72 cupcakes. And guess who had to do the frosting? 72 bleeding cupcakes. And never once did it out of my, or in my mind, and I was by myself in the building, did I think to eat that, lick it, touch it, whatever. You know, I had to touch it, but never, ever, ever. And there's where I went from not being able to be near this stuff, smell this stuff, think about it, to like, oh well, it was like plastic.
Hi everybody, my name is Gloria and I'm a compulsive overeater. Over four decades in this program. So it's 43 years. And I was working the program before I ever heard of the program because I was asking God to help all the time to lose weight and nothing was happening. And I thought God didn't care about me. I didn't think I was important. And one day, he must have been sick of listening to me, and he knew there was, I believe, this is my truth, I believe he knew there was some tough stuff coming down the pipe for me, you know, in family stuff. And he probably went, oh, she's been asking for this about losing weight. There's this program that could do both for her. And so he put a couple people in my life that said just the right words to get me interested. They both sang to me, we just lost 50 pounds and we go to OA. And so they brought me to OA and, you know, I, besides losing the weight, which I thought was all I needed to lose, it gave me a whole new life. Somebody said to me, and I had to, she had to write it on a recipe card because I couldn't keep it straight in my head. And it was, I'm living in recovery and I'm learning how to live. And that's been my experience over the last 40 years, learning how to live with all the different things, good and bad. And trust me, there were some real heavy issues and I still have some of them go on. But I didn't have to eat over any of them. You know, I didn't have to eat when my mother died, when my grandbabies died. You know, excuse me, sorry, I didn't want to get emotional. But many other things. And, you know, I've been able to go through life. 40 years, you have all kinds of changes in your life. And, you know, we all do. And to be able to go through them, and with friends that were not in program, doing things very different than me. I still watched my food. I did all that kind of stuff. I didn't have to eat over what was happening. And I'm so grateful to say I am still abstinent. You can do it no matter what it is, you know. And I have God in my heart and in my head. And it doesn't matter if I'm in a room this big, or if I'm by myself, if God's there with me, you know, I know that He's going to know about it, even if nobody else does. And so that helps me to not eat compulsively. Living alone now for the first time. I never lived alone all my life until my husband died 2 years ago. And even with that, I cook for myself every day. When my friends that lost their husbands, this girl that, I'll just say this, she cooked Greek food. Well, she was going to McDonald's after her husband died. She never cooked again. And I cook every day for myself because I know I'm important enough to eat the right foods, and I'm grateful you're all here. Thanks.
Morning. My name is Christine. Manchester, New Jersey. I've been in OA for 44 years, one day at a time. And, you know, and the miracle of this program is restoring relationships for me. When I call up my girls and ask them to do something that perhaps it was not their fondest wish, I always say, you know, if it's not one thing, it's your mother. And we've all heard a lot of mother stories here, you know, and mine too. But and that was the biggest thing in my life. Why didn't she love her? Not the preferred child, but I was the one that took care of her until she died. And I made some decisions when I started to work the steps with the sponsor. First, I wasn't going to fight with anybody in my family. And when she would call up and there would be the tone, I'd say, I have to go, the case is calling. I'll give you a call tomorrow. And she would send me these letters. And in the letters were all her complaints about life. And every time I would open the letter, I would get nuts. And she'd put a check in it. And then she'd call me up after she mailed the letter and say, I mailed you a letter. I said, yep, that's a letter. I can't open it because every time I open those letters, I get mad at you. I put a check in it. I said, no, not today, Mom. And then she'd call me the next day and say, I sent you a letter. I said, no, not yet. She said, but I put a check in it. I said, that's all right. I'm not opening it today. And she called me the third day and she'd say, I sent you the letter. I said, I'm not opening that because I don't want to be mad at you. She said, well, I guess I'll send you no more letters. I said, that's the point. And there was another time when she called up and she said, oh, I heard the tone. And I said, what's the matter, sweetheart? Is nobody paying attention to me today? She said, I just want to hear somebody say they love me. We had never had an exchange like that. I think it was 40 years old at the time. And I thought, she just didn't know anything about me. You know, she missed the best part of her children because of this, whatever it was between us. But when she got sick, I took care of her with a 3R. And I'm grateful for every day that I had to do that. She was not the only one. I had 4 others I was healthcare proxy for. And the program helped me to walk through all of that. So, at any rate, I'm still here, still grateful every day, and still happy to be able to learn. I guess.
Hey, my name is Lynn, and I'm a food addict and a compulsive. Hi, guys. Our meeting is Potsdam, New York. We're up, way up near the Canadian border.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Couple, you know, when the first speaker spoke about mothers, boy, can I relate. And I went through stuff as a kid. My mom allowed sexual inappropriateness. She was sexually inappropriate. She was a rageaholic. She was emotionally, verbally abusive. She was physically abusive. She was, they call them gaslighting now, I guess. She was a crazy maker. She was a ton of different things. And when I finally broke out of the mold, and in my teen years, my mantra was, somebody, who's going to pay for this? I've paid for this all my life. Who's going to pay? And the rage that I had was unbelievable. And so fast, you know, and I went out there, I was into amphetamines for the same reasons. I lost the weight and it shut my mind went endlessly, but it shut me up to criticizing myself. And then, you know, when I got into drugs and alcohol, all of that, I got a mental vacation from who I was. It's like when I eat too much and I'm ready to pass out, finally just shuts up. Anyway, you know, fast forward, I was in therapy, I was doing a bunch of stuff and program, and, you know, I've been in since 2000, and I just, working on the mother stuff. Finally, I read in the Sunshiner, I think it was, about this woman would go to the nursing home where her mother was, and her mother was a hellacious woman that would ridicule her, say all these negative things, go on and on. And she would be very gentle and loving, and she would leave. And finally, one of the aides there said, I just have to ask you, how can you handle this woman and what she's doing? And she said to the aide, I want to be the kind of daughter that I need to be, not what my mother thinks I should be. That I stopped, and I started thinking, what kind of daughter do I want to be? And so I started being that for my mom. I put down a definite set of boundaries. I didn't talk to her for almost a year because she was crazy making my son. But anyway, and after that year, she had respect for me. Fast forward, my mom's dying. It took almost a year for my mom to die of different things. We had incredible conversations during that year. I'm out of time. Anyway, the bottom line for it all was that my mom said to me in the final hours, she said, you know, Lynn, I tried to be a better mother than my mother, and she was, and to be a good mom, and I didn't make it. And I said, no, Mom, you didn't. But what you did was great, and it was all you could be. And then she said this classic thing to me, you know, your brother is really an asshole. And I said, he is. She finally came around. So that's it for me. Thanks.
Hey, everyone. I'm Ala, compulsive overeater. This is my first in-person meeting. I've been in the program since October of 2021, and I guess like I'm a Zoom child or something like that. Yeah. This is also great practice because I'm going to be speaking at a conference in Europe next week. So I'm like, so I want to talk about layers, accountability, and parenting. Layers. So I've been in program for 3 years, and it is incredible how much more I learn about the layers of surrender. The more life that I live in program, there's more and more for me to surrender about. It's really fascinating because I'm on this journey of like starting to build a family and, you know, go through all that with my husband. And, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, what are the things that I need to be accountable for to, you know, to myself, to my program, and to my, you know, my children. It just feels so good, so fucking good to know that the 12 steps are probably the most resilient framework for living my life. I'm super busy at work right now. I got a huge, it wasn't technically a promotion, but I've gone from like working with like 2 teams to like 30 across different partners and da da da. Like I'm in charge of a bunch of shit. And, and I'm just like, all right, well, I'm just going to learn a bunch of shit. I'm just going to go for this, and I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to ask for a ton of help. And it's just so funny to watch all of this chaos going on in my life, personally and professionally, and think, yeah, you know what, it'll work out, and I'll figure it out, and it's going to be fine. And if I ask for enough help, and if I really concentrate on step 3 and step 11, it's going to be fine. And it's working. Like, wow. Cool. 1 minute left. Okay. Parenting and accountability. So on the one hand, you know, for me thinking about like, how am I going to handle it when my 12-year-old starts like, you know, hanging out with an unsavory group of kids and getting in trouble a lot. I'm just like, you know what? I actually do know how to handle that. I'm going to be like, listen, I'm going to start setting some boundaries here, but like your choices are your own. Buddy, you, whatever, insert whatever pronouns. You know, my job here is to give you information and to, you know, set some boundaries. Yeah, but like, if you want this for yourself and you want to go on this path, then have fun, kids, literally. Parenting, in terms of my mom has started abusing sleeping pills again. She's using all of these addict tactics, and I'm just standing so confidently in mom. She's in rehab before, she knows it's all. I need you to take step 1 before I do anything for you. She is like, I'm out of time, but she's like, well, this, well, that, well, da da da. I tire of your, of your rigidity. And I'm just like, I need you to take step 1. It feels so good. So just that confidence in the 12 steps. So thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. If we could just.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.